Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Kedushin is Lamed Dalid. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf as long as Zechon is Baslipa Gabriela Bashmuel. We find ourselves on Lamed Gimel Amud Beis towards the bottom of the Amud. We're speaking about the halacha of standing in front of a Talmid Chacham and standing in front of your Rebbe. This segued from the discussion of the Gemara that one has to have kavod for their parents, for the mother and for the father. And so the pasuk says, "Mimnei Seva Takum Va'adar T'Pnei Zaken," which allowed the Gemara to have a discussion in terms of having kavod for your Rav and for elderly people. The Gemara quoted a brisa, extensive brisa, was quoted on the back end of Lamed Beis Amud Beis, and yesterday's daf basically picked apart the brisa point by point, discussing various points within the brisa. We ended off yesterday with a discussion in the Gemara. If let's say you have a conundrum where your son is your Rebbe, so should the son be standing for the Rebbe? Should the father be standing for his son, the Rebbe? Should the son be standing for his father, the Talmud, and for the father should be standing for his son, the Rebbe? I ended off yesterday by quoting the Rosh, quoted the Maharam Rutenberg, who tells the story. He didn't quote the Maharam. He told the story about the Maharam, that once the Maharam was Ola L'Gdula, once he got the position of being the head of the community, so the Maharam never visited his father once again. I told you it's a unique story. Maybe more involved in the story, but that's the story brought down by the Rosh. I told you also it finds its way all the way into the Shulchan Aruch. The Rama quotes it as well. Okay. Anyway, we are.
No kibbutz, huh?
People have asked on that story. Yamshu Shalom asked on that story. Anyway, Ibai Lahu. Okay, we are two wide lines down on Lamed Gimel Amud Beis, and a couple more discussions to be had. Rechov kemahalach dami olam. Now, the rules are very simple, meaning if he's walking in front of you, so you have to stand in front of a Talmid Chacham, in front of an elderly person, in front of your parents. Okay, what if he's not walking in front of you, but what if he's being transported in front of you? Okay, he's in a simple example, he's driving in a car past you, he's in a wheelchair and he's being wheeled past you. So do you need to stand? But he's not walking past you, he's being transported past you. So rechov kemahalach dami olam. So is being, I guess the modern term would be driven. If he's being driven past you, but he's not actually walking, is that considered like walking, or is that not considered like walking? I'm Rabbi Tashmos, so the Rabbi says, okay, well, we'll arrive at this conclusion based on a Mishnah. Mishnah Negayim, the ground rules are as follows. If you have Tsaras, you give off Tumah. Tsaras gives off Tumah the same way that a mace gives off Tumah. Right, having tsaras is like kemes. We already know that by the Torah. Moshe's description of his sister Miriam when she had tsaras is that she shouldn't be like a dead person. So the halach is that tsaras is like a dead person, and that applies halachically as well. Just like a dead person gives off tumas, maga, masa, and ohel, contact, carrying, and being under the same roof together. So the same thing is true with tsaras. Tsaras, you give off tumah if either you come into contact with it, you carry it, or you're under the same roof. That's how tumah tsaras is transmitted. Right. There's one detail in terms of tumas ohel by tsaras, and that is that the metzora has to be in a sitting position in order to give off tumas ohel. Meaning that if the metzora is standing, and certainly walking, so the Metzora is not going to be giving off Tumas Ohel. The Metzora has to be in a sitting position. Okay, those are the ground rules, and with that we'll understand the Mishnah. Tami Yoshev Tachas Ilam Vatar Omeid Tami. If the Tami is sitting under the tree, and the Tahor is standing under the tree, now it really doesn't matter whether or not the Tahor is standing or sitting. That's not the point. The point is that the Tami, the Metzora, is actually sitting under the tree, so that's it. That conveys Tumas Ohel. And therefore, the Tahor person under the tree is going to be Tami. Tami Omei Tachasi Ilan, if the Tami person is standing on the tree, Vitahor Yoshev, and the Tahor person is sitting, and again, it really doesn't matter whether the Tahor is standing or sitting. The Mishnah just likes the symmetry of these phrases. So Tahor. So then the Tahor person remains Tahor. Because again, the ground rules are very simple. In order for the Mitzora to give off Tumas Ohel, the Mitzora has to be in a sitting position. V'im Yoshev Atameh, V'im Yoshev Atameh, Tahor Atameh. Now, if the tummy person decides to go from a standing position to a sitting position, so once the Metzorah sits under the tree, so then he's going to give off Tumas Ohel. So being under the same tree, now you will receive the Tumas Metzorah. Okay, so far so good. And all this brings us to the next point of the Mishnah, which is really the point that we want. V'chein be'evin hamanugas. Now, let's say you have a stone with saras. It's possible. Remember, well, we just this is this week's parsha. We just did it last week. That's not true. Last week we did saras. Nige adam and nige. Nige begadim, right? We did saras as it relates to people and to clothing. That was tazria. This week's parsha mitzora. So we're doing nige batim. We're doing saras of a house. So it's possible that a house is contracted with saras, and so that means that the stone of the house has actually neged saras. It has a discoloration of saras. So that means now that if the stone, the same thing would be true by a stone under the tree. Now, the stone is an inanimate object. What does that mean? The stone is sitting or the stone is standing? That doesn't make much sense. Obviously, what the Mishnah must mean is that the stone is being handled by somebody. And the same rules are going to apply. Meaning, if the person holding the stone is sitting, so then there is Tumas Saras that is being broadcasted under the tree. And if the person who's holding the stone is standing and certainly walking, so then the stone is not considered in a stationary position. And that's exactly the point. As long as the stone is being held by somebody and being transported, the stone is as if it's walking. And then the Gemara says, "Va'amar Rav Nachman bar Kohen zos ameres v'chov kama halach damei shma mina." So that's exactly the point. The fact that it's being transported, and the fact that the stone now is, when being held by somebody and being transported by somebody, it's as if the stone itself is moving. Is as if it's walking. Certainly, if you have a person who's being transported, it's as if the person is actually walking. The Gemara says Shema Mina. That's the conclusion. Rechov kemahalach dami. That when you are being transported, and it's as if you're moving. So in our discussion, that would mean then that if you have a elderly person who's being wheeled past you, who's driving past you or being driven past you, so you have to stand. The Gemara over here has a question about standing in front of a Sefer Torah. So Rav Chilkiv, Rav Simon, Rav Elazar, Mikav HaChomer, the Gemara over here constructs a logical argument. If I stand for the people who learn the Sefer Torah, which is what yesterday's daf was dedicated to discussing, so for sure I should stand for the Sefer Torah itself, the source. Rav Elazar, Rav Yaakov, Bar Zavdi, Havayasvi Chalif, I'm sorry, yeah. Rav Yasveh, Rav Elai, Rav Yaakov Bar Zavdi were sitting. Chalav Azar, Rabbi Shimon Bar Abba. And along comes Rabbi Shimon Bar Abba, they come in, they stood in front of him. Amar Lahu. Now here, he gets bothered by the fact that they're standing up for him. So he says, number one, Chadadasam Chachim Avanei Chaver. First of all, you guys are real Talmid Chachamim. I'm a colleague. I'm not your Rebbe. So for that reason alone, you don't need to stand for me. And also, you guys are Torah. Meaning, you're right now serious Talmid Chachamim, engrossed in the study of Torah. And you're going to stop for the person who, right now, I'm learning Torah. But you guys are Torah. And meaning, you yourselves are learning Torah. So, Savallah. And the Gemara says that in his second argument, he's going like Rabbi Lazar, which is that if people are engaged in the study of Torah, at that point in time, they need not stand for anybody, even for the Rebbe, at the time when they're learning Torah. Okay, and the Gemara concludes this discussion with three words, Layit Allah Abaye. Abaye cursed the person who subscribed to this viewpoint. Meaning, Abaye strenuously objected to the viewpoint that you shouldn't stand for your Rebbe even while you're learning Torah. Meaning, you should, according to Abaye, you should stand for your Rebbe even while you're learning Torah. Okay. The Gemara ends this entire discussion with a little bit of a gadata. The Gemara quotes the pasuk from from the end of from Parshas Kisisa. V'ibito achrei Moshe ad bo'a olah. They looked at Moshe until he got back to the tent. To which the Gemara quotes Rav Ami of Rav Yitzchak Gnavcha Chalamar LeGnavcha Chalamar LeShevach. Now they were staring at Moshe as he was walking back to his tent. What does that mean? Meaning, we know what that means, but what exactly is the context in which they're stirring emotion? To which the Gemara says, some say it as a Gnai, some say it as a Shevach. Now, Chalam al Gnai v'chalam al Shevach. Mandam al Gnai k'di'isa. So the one who says it's a Gnai, so the Gemara says, you know what we're talking about. Which is great, because to us, the readers of the Gemara, no, we don't. We don't know what the Gemara is making reference to. The Gemara is just simply saying, look, there were people who disparaged Moshe, and the Gemara says, and enough said. Well, it happens to be that we have Rashi over here, so Rashi over here fills in the blank in terms of what was the how did they disparage Moshe? Rashi writes, Mishum the second to third. It starts the third to last line in Rashi. Mishum the davar meguna hu lo ratzal lefarsima. So first of all, Rashi says, you know, the Gemara didn't want to say it because it's disparaging. They disparage Moshe, and the Gemara doesn't want to say it. And then immediately after that, Rashi says, "But I'll tell you because I happen to know." He says, "If you look at the Medrash Tanchuma, so you'll see exactly what it is." And Rashi over here divulges. So, in of itself, it's interesting. I mean, it's making an obvious point. Rashi says that the Gemara didn't want to say it because it's very disparaging. But Rashi says, "But I'll tell you what it is." So, why did? I mean, you can ask this question in a number of ways. Either, why did the Medrash say it if the Gemara didn't want to say it? Why did Rashi say it if the Gemara didn't want to say it? Okay. I understand it's a dilemma, but I'll read Rashi. I mean, you have the Rashi also there. So, Bemedrash Tanchun, Rau Kama Avim Shokav, Kama Tzavarav Shamein, Hakol Mishalanu. So, basically, they looked at Moshe and they said, you know, he's... he's beefing up a little bit, right? A little thick around the waist, right? The neck is getting a little bit thicker. You know what? Moshe Rabbeinu is skimming off the top, right? And he collected a lot of money for the Mishkan. And so they were staring at Moshe, basically noticing how he seems to be getting a little bit older and a little bit rounder. And, okay, must be that Moshe is skimming off the top. That's the Medrash Tanchuma's understanding of the Pasuk, V'ibito Achrei Moshe, as a disparaging comment that the Jewish people made about Moshe Rabbeinu. Okay, and by the way, the takeaway point from here, I think it's pretty simple, is that it happens, meaning we're talking about Moshe Rabbeinu. People in leadership are just going to be under scrutiny, and of course it's not true, but that's just the way of the world.
Why didn't they get Sarat? Well, Miriam did.
Okay. All right. I don't know. So the Gemara says that's one. And Man Damer LeShavach. Now we're back to the Gemara. What about the Shvach? How could you understand this pasuk in the context of Shvach? Amar Chizkia, Amar Li Rabbi Chanina, Bered Rabbi Abba, Amar Rabbi Abba, Amar Rav Avdimi, Demin Chayfa, Chacham Ov. Okay, I'm sorry. Chacham Over Omed Lefanav Dal Amos. When you have a standard Talmud Chacham, it's not the best way to describe it, but for the context. For the purpose of this context, let's just call it a standard Talmud Chacham. If you have a standard Talmud Chacham, so over, so he's walking past you. So Omen Melfan of Dal Amos Vekem Shavar Dal Amos Yoshev. So basically, create a diameter of, I'm sorry, a radius of 4 Amos, and as long as he enters into that radius, so you stand. When he exits that radius, so then you sit. Very simple. Now Av Beis Din. Now we're just going to move up the ranks. So now we're talking about Nav Beis Din. He's the head of the Beis Din. So over Omed Milafan of Malo Einav Vekem Shavar Dal Amos Yoshev. So in terms of when you stand up for him, so the moment you see him. In terms of when you can sit back down again, after he leaves your 4 Amos radius. Okay. Now see, now we're moving up. We're now talking about the leader of the Jewish people. Over Omed Milafan of Malo Einav Veinu Yoshev Ad Sheyoshev Mimkomo. Shenemar V'ibito Achrei Moshe Ad Bo Olam. So in terms of the leader of the Jewish people, the moment you see him, that's when you should stand. And when should you sit back down again? Only when he is Yoshev Bimkomo, only when he sits back in his place. That's what we're learning from the Pasuk of V'ibito Achrei Moshe. That, in other words, they were looking at him, but in this context what it means is they were looking and they didn't sit back down, until he sat back down. Until he went back to his tent. Okay, and obviously now you understand why the Medrash was brought in over here. This really punctuates the discussion of yesterday's Gemara regarding the need to stand up for a Talmid Chacham, for an elderly person. Now we're learning that there's a discrepancy between a standard Talmid Chacham and an Av Beis Din versus a Nasi. Let's go on. We go back to our Mishnah, and now we move on to the next section of our Mishnah, making distinctions between time-bound mitzvahs versus non-time-bound mitzvahs. We're talking about positive commandments. In the context of positive commandments, so there is a distinction between time-bound versus non-time-bound. And the Gemara over here is going to look for sources. We're on the last line of Lamed Gimel Amud Beis, on Rabban Ezer Mitzvah Seser Shazman Grama. So first of all, what are examples? As if like we didn't know. But the Gemara obviously are citing these examples for a specific reason. What are examples of time-bound mitzvahs? The total number of positive commandments are 248. It's counted by the Moneh HaMitzvos. So of the 248, what are examples of time-bound? So the Mishnah over here gives five examples. Sukkah, Lulav, Shofar, Tzitzis, Tefillin. Okay, five simple, basic examples of mitzvahs esei shazman grama. Now, the first three are easy. Sukkah, Lulav, and Shofar are time-bound mitzvahs because they're calendaric. You look on the calendar and you know, if I blow Shofar today, that would be very nice and I accomplish nothing. It's not a mitzvah today. But if we now move forward to the first day of Tishrei, so it's a mitzvah to do so. And the Sukkah and Lulav, same thing, 15th of Tishrei. And then continue on for the next 7 days, or depending on where you live. The Sukkah 8, Lulav 7, but anyway... So the first three are really easy. Tzitzis and tefillin are somewhat more challenging in terms of explaining why they are time-bound mitzvahs. So if you take a look at Rashi on the top of the next Amud, so Rashi says, tefillin, kasavar laila loves man tefillin. Inami shabbos v'yantov loves man tefillin. Hilka chivin di'ika shaita de la mechayva zman gramahu. So Rashi over here writes that in terms of tefillin, so two ways to approach why tefillin are time-bound mitzvahs. Number one, says Rashi, is that it's only specific to the daytime, not to the nighttime. Nighttime is not a zman tefillin. But as Rashi over here gives a second explanation, Rashi knows that this point over here is subject to a debate. So that's why Rashi gives a second explanation. Meaning there are some opinions in the Gemara that you can wear your tefillin at night as well. So if you subscribe to that viewpoint, you also agree that tefillin is a time-bound mitzvah. So Rashi over here writes, because of Shabbos and Yantiv. Shabbos and Yantiv are not the time to wear tefillin, and so therefore, since there are dates on the calendar which are excluded, therefore it's not a time-bound mitzvah. Okay. Huh? Matzah is also... There are many other examples. The Gemara over here is just citing five. So, in the five that the Gemara is citing, we're just giving some sort of rhyme and reason in terms of why it should be. Good. What Rashi does is Rashi skips on tzitzis. Rashi doesn't give an explanation of why tzitzis is a time-bound mitzvah. So, if you take a look at Tosfos on the top of Lamed Almed Aleph. So, Tosfos says... Tosos first narrow line of the Tosos, v'tzitzis techashin and hacha mitzvah sefer shazman grama, the fact that tzitzis is considered a time by mitzvah, omeri dahainu karebi shimon de beberkat chelas. So the Bali Atosos explain that it's based on a position taken by Rabbi Shimon in Menachos. The sefer laila lav zman tzitzis hu. Nighttime is not tzitzis time. And therefore women are exempt, and that in fact is the halacha that tzitzis is a time by mitzvah, and therefore women are exempt from the mitzvah of tzitzis. There is a basic machlokis amongst the Rishonim in terms of the nighttime exemption of tzitzis. It's a machlokis between the Rambam and the Rush. And basically the machlokis goes like this. According to the Rambam, once it turns into night, right? Let's talk literally in this case, black and white. Meaning, I know there's this Banish Mashas period, but let's just talk simple black and white. Let's say daytime and nighttime. According to the Rambam, if it is daytime, there's an obligation to wear tzitzis. If it's nighttime, there's simply no more obligation. And that's it. Meaning, according to the Rambam, it's very simple. It is a distinction of day versus night. And so that means, according to the Rambam, once it's nighttime, that's it. There's no longer an obligation. Yeah, I mean, you can keep them on. There's no, you know, it's not, you don't lose anything by keeping them on, but there's just simply no obligation. But then there is the opinion of the Rush. And the Rush's opinion is that when it comes to the tzitzis exemption of night, it's not a function of day versus night. It's a function of daytime clothing versus nighttime clothing. What we would call pajamas. Meaning, according to the Rush, if you're wearing your daytime clothing, so then you're obligated in the mitzvah tzitzis, irrespective of when you wear it. If you wear your nighttime clothing, what you and I would call pajamas, so then there is no obligation to wear tzitzis on it. So according to the Rush,
if someone's a night shift worker and works at night, he's going to wear
pajamas. Right, according to the Rush, so if you're wearing your pajamas, say even though it's still the daytime, so then you wouldn't have to wear tzitzis. So so this is the basic machlokes between the Rambam and the Rush, how to understand the nighttime exemption. According to the Rambam, it's simply a function of night. According to the Rush, it's a function of when are these clothing primarily worn, which will then define the clothing as either daytime clothing or nighttime clothing, and then will define whether or not you're going to be obligated or exempt. The Shulchan Aruch does not take a side on this issue. He cites both positions and should be cautious for both positions.
How do you handle the Uri Tam Oto at night?
Well, that's why there's an exemption. But in other words, now, good, we know that there's an exemption at night. Now it's just a question of what exactly creates that exemption. Is it the nighttime, or is it the fact that it's nighttime clothing? So that's I'm just presenting. It's a machlokus between the Rishonim.
If you want to base on Uri Tam Oto, does it mean that a blind person should not learn tzitzis?
Right, that's, I forget where, you forgive me, I forget where, but the Gemara discusses that. I just off the top of my head, I do not remember. Anyway, that's the that's the Bryce, the simple presentation of time bound mitzvahs. There are others, obviously. The Gemara here is giving us a sample size, a representative sample size, so that I did not do the research myself, that all told there are 30 mitzvahs eseh shazman grama. I can't verify the number. I didn't fact check, but I heard about that many. Anyway, so here we have the Braisa gives us five. So mitzvah zeh shelo zman grama. In terms of what are positive commandments that are not time bound, so once again we're getting just a sample size. Mezuzah maka aveda v'shiloh chakan. So a sample size of four. The mitzvah of mezuzah, I think we're all familiar. Mitzvah of maka, putting a fence around your roof, not our roofs are slanted, no one's walking on our roofs, but we're talking here in the olden days, the roofs were flat top, like buildings in Manhattan, or certainly we could discuss balconies as well, so that nobody falls off, so you have to, the Torah instructs us to put a railing around. Aveda, you find a lost item, you have to return it, and Shiloh HaKan, and the sending away of the mother bird. Right, these are positive commandments, not bound by any time, and therefore, women are going to be obligated in these mitzvahs. Okay, so sample size of time-bound mitzvahs, positive time-bound mitzvahs, mitzvahs that say positive commandments that are not time-bound, and the Gemara says uklalahu. Now let us pause for just a moment, says the Gemara, and think about it. Is this always true? That when you have a time bound mitzvah, women are going to be exempt. When you have a nine time bound mitzvah, women are going to be obligated. Again, we're now, today's daf is only talking about mitzvos esse, positive commandments. Tomorrow we'll talk about the los ases. But right now, today, we're talking about the esse, the positive commandments. So the Gemara says, hare, matzah, simcha, hakel. So three simple examples, one of them coming up a week from tomorrow night. Matzah, simcha, and hakel. Where? Mitzvah says Shazman Grama. Where are the time bound mitzvahs for Nashim Chayavos? And women are obligated. The mitzvah of matzah, I think we're familiar. The night of the 15th, we have a positive commandment in the Torah to eat matzah. I've made this comment before. It is the only mitzvah that we have, meaning without a base of mikdash, the only mitzvah bizmanenu, where there's a positive mitzvah to eat. Shabbos, there is a positive mitzvah to enjoy Shabbos. Oneg Shabbos. But that's it. Meaning the Torah does not say specifically, you must eat on Shabbos. Shabbos is a mitzvah of oneg. Where else is there a mitzvah to eat? Purim, I understand there's a mitzvah to have simcha. Right, to have a se'uda. That's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to Rabbanan. Perhaps the only other day where there is a positive commandment to eat is Erev Yom Kippur. Right, and by the way, I'll say more than perhaps, meaning that's a good example. But the positive commandment to eat, and specifically to eat something, is only the Seder night, where there is a positive mitzvah in the Torah. So funny, we Jews, you know, we're always cast in this mold of we love eating, which by the way we do. Right. But I'm saying the only positive commandment we have in the entire year to eat is only Seder night, and that is the matzah mitzvah to eat matzah. Anyway, so the mitzvah of matzah, simcha's yontiv. Now this is also a mitzvah to. Kohanim. Again, in the time of the Beis Hamikdash, there are many more examples. I'm talking about without the Beis Hamikdash. Correct. The kiddush. You have to make kiddush over a cup of wine. That's the Rabbanan. You have to eat something. Okay, good. But that's the Torah doesn't instruct us to do that. That's all part of Oneg Shabbos. That's the mitzvah is to be ma'aneg, to enjoy Shabbos, but there's no mitzvah per se to eat. Anyway, the mitzvah of simcha, so that is in the time of the Beis Hamikdash, you brought your carbon simcha, and you would eat your carbon simcha. That's a mitzvah which is time-bound, as we're going to see in just a moment. Women are obligated. And the mitzvah of hakel, the year after the Shemitah year on Sukkos, so we all go to the Beis Hamikdash to hear the king read Sefer Dvarim. This is a mitzvah which is obviously time-bound, and yet women are obligated. Three examples the Gemara has just given to us where they're time-bound mitzvahs and women are obligated. Mitzvah says, Seshas man grama v'nashim chayav is v'su. And the Gemara says, and let's not stop over there, let's also go in the other direction. There are non-time-bound mitzvahs that women are going to be exempt from. Haritama Torah, Piri V'rivya, Pijan Aben. Three examples of mitzvahs, essay, Shelo'as man grama, non-time-bound mitzvahs, and women are going to be exempt. The mitzvah of Talmud Torah, which we already established earlier, women are exempt from. Pira Virivya, having children. Now, we already know this many times. It's going to be challenging to have children without having women in this world. Okay. A little bit more than challenging. But they don't have a mitzvah per se. Obviously, they're aiding and facilitating the men to fulfill their mitzvah. I mean, obviously, but there is no mitzvah on them per se. And Pidgin Aben, and the redemption of the firstborn, which we already established earlier several days ago, that women are exempt from that mitzvah as well, even though these are non-time-bound mitzvahs. Now, yes, it's true that you can't do the Pidgin Aben until the 30th day. But from that point going forward, there is no limit time, there's no limitation of time in terms of when you could do the actual mitzvah of Pidgin Aben.
The definition of Shazman Grom means that the time actually, passage of time causes
to
the mitzvah.
So I'll tell you what. We'll discuss this after. It's a lengthier discussion in terms of defining Zman Groma versus non-Zman Groma. Right now, just the Gemara is saying it very clearly, so we don't have to equivocate on these. These are very clear examples the Gemara is giving of non-time-bound mitzvahs. And the Gemara says, the lav mitzvah says, Shazman Zman Groma, huva nashim paturus. And women are going to be exempt. So, here's what we have right now. We have a rule, and then the Gemara points out, but we have notable exceptions. So how can you have a rule with notable exceptions? So the Gemara says, it's very simple. You have a rule with notable exceptions. That's the way rules work. Amar Rav Yochanan ein lamedim in aklalos, be'afil b'makam shenam arbachutz. Rav Yochanan takes it even one step further. Look, you have generalities. That's how life works. Life works with general rules. And with every general rule, there are going to be exceptions. And Rav Yochanan says, and I'll tell you what, even when you learn a Brais or a Mishnah, and the Brais and the Mishnah says the word chutz, except, Rav Yochanan says, that doesn't even mean they're the only exceptions. There could be other exceptions as well. Rav Yochanan says, I'll give you a simple example. Did none. Here we have a Mishnah Erevin. Bechoma Arvin Meshatfin. You can do an Erev, Chatzeros, you have to do it with food. And Shituf Mevoos, and you have to do it with food. Now, without going into the details we're talking about now, this is Masechta Erevin, the unification of a community so that we can carry from one Rishus Yachid to another Rishus Yachid. For our purposes, all you need to know is that it's done with food. And now, you could do it with food, but it has to be a, now I'll say a caloric food, It's not the best way to describe it, but it's good. It helps. It really helps understand. It can't be salt and it can't be water. Meaning these foods don't provide any type of really any real caloric intake, and so it's you can't create a Eruv Chatzeres with these items. Then the Gemara goes on to say, "So like it." Now wait 1 second. Here you have a mission that tells you could use any food except for water and salt, and we have the word chutz. And Rav Yochanan says, and there are other exceptions as well. Says truffles, mushrooms. These are things which are also cannot be used for an Eruv Chatzeres. Now they're not mentioned in the Mishnah. You know why? Very simple. Because even when you have sweeping generalities, and even when it says except for this, that doesn't mean that these are the only exceptions. Rav Yochanan says exactly that point. So just because we have a general rule doesn't mean that there aren't exceptions. There are going to be exceptions. And even when some exceptions are listed, there'll be other exceptions as well. Here, yes, the general rule is women are exempt from time-bound mitzvahs, and women are obligated in non-time-bound mitzvahs. All that's true. But that doesn't mean they're going to be exceptions. Of course they're going to be exceptions. And so here now, today's daf, Lama Dalet in Kiddushin, is the source where, how we arrive at the conclusion that women are exempt from time bound mitzvahs. Now, mind you, by the way, it's another point that we've said before, Gemara is not really interested in why. The why question, which is always going to be the hardest question. The one that, you know, I've heard answers, but the Gemara is not focused on why. The Gemara is focused on the what, meaning what in the Torah is the mechanism in which teaches us that women are going to be exempt. So the Gemara here discusses mitzvah. How do I know? So the Gemara says it's created through a limud from tefillin. Now, tefillin, as we already discussed, is a time-bound mitzvah, and women are exempt from tefillin. So since women are exempt from tefillin, therefore that creates a binyan av, a precedent where women are going to be exempt from all time-bound mitzvahs. Now, the Gemara says, if it's tefillin, now, it only begs the next question, well, how do I know that women are exempt from tefillin? So the Gemara says, Gamar lami Talmud Torah. So there the Gemara says, that's a lima that we learn out from Talmud Torah. Ma Talmud Torah, Nashim Peturus, Av Tefillin, Nashim Peturus. So just like women are exempt from Talmud Torah, so women are going to be exempt from tefillin. Why did we just create a link between tefillin and Talmud Torah? It's very simple, because the Torah does so. If you look at the Torah references tefillin four times. Okay, we all know that because those are the four parshios in which we write and we put in the tefillin when we put it on our head and on our arm. In the Shel Rosh, it's compartmentalized into four different boxes. In the arm, it's written in one cloth and rolled and put into the Shel Yad. But four times in the Torah where the Torah speaks about tefillin. Two times we're more familiar with because we say it twice a day in Shema. And in Shema, so you have the mitzvah of Limud HaTorah. That's Limud HaTorah. Then Ukshartam LaOsayedech VaYulutotafos Beinenecha, the mitzvah of Tefillin, and then Uchsaftam Amazos Besechu Visharecha. Then you have the mitzvah of Mezuzah. So what did you just see happen in the first paragraph of Shema? You see that the mitzvah of tefillin is juxtaposed right next to the mitzvah of Limud HaTorah. We know that women are exempt from Limud HaTorah. That's something that we already established earlier, and we already had drushes that covered that. So once women are exempt from Limud HaTorah, from Talmud Torah, they're also going to be exempt from tefillin as well. Okay. Let's go over this right now as well. In the second paragraph of Shema, there's also reference to tefillin over there. Now, if you haven't seen today's daf before, so you don't know the subtle difference, and if you know the subtle difference without having seen today's daf, so that means that you're very observant. In the second paragraph of Shema, you also have the same three mitzvos that are given, but not in the same order. Let's follow the second paragraph of Shema. Second paragraph of Shema, V'samtem Yisrael al avavchem al nashchem k'shatem osam la'os al yedchem. So first, in the second paragraph of Shema, you have the mitzvah of tefillin. then you have the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, then you have the mitzvah of mezuzah. So did you see what happened? In the first paragraph of Shema, you have first Talmud Torah, then tefillin, then mezuzah. In the second paragraph of Shema, one and two get flipped. First tefillin, then Talmud Torah, and then mezuzah. That's critical for today's daf. We have that right now in front of us. So now let's go back to our Gemara. The Gemara says, let's go back to the starting point of this discussion. I'm going to start again from the beginning of the sugya. Minolan gamar mitzvilin. So how do I know that women are exempt from tefillin? Sorry. How do I know that women are exempt from all positive commandments that are time bound? We learn it from tefillin. So mom. Tefillin, nashim peturus, af kol mitzvos, esay shazman, gram, and nashim peturus. Just like women are exempt from tefillin, they're exempt from all mitzvos. U tefillin, gram, alami, Talmud Torah. Now, tefillin is learned from Talmud Torah, based on the juxtaposition that we just went over. Ma Talmud Torah, nashim peturus, af tefillin, nashim peturus. Now, the Gemara asks the question, v'nakish tefillin le'mezuzah. So, why not? Because in the first paragraph of Shema, tefillin finds itself sandwiched between, on the front end, Talmud Torah, and on the other side, mezuzah. So if you're looking for a connection, why not create a connection between tefillin and mezuzah versus tefillin and Talmud Torah? To which the Gemara's response is, tefillin and Talmud Torah itkesh bein beparsha rishona, bein beparsha shnia, tefillin lemezuzah beparsha shnia, lo itkesh. So the Gemara says, well, it's because of that subtle shift that we just went over a moment ago. Because in the first parsha, you have tefillin and mezuzah, tefillin and Talmud Torah connected. In the second parsha, you have also tefillin and Talmud Torah connected. So that's the Torah basically telling us, that's the connection to focus on in terms of teaching us when women are going to be exempt from the mitzvah of tefillin. In the second parsha, you simply don't have the connection between tefillin and mezuzah, because one and two get flipped. Okay. V'nakish mezuzah l'Talmud Torah. So the Gemara says, okay, so let me ask you this question. Why not make a hekesh between mezuzah and Talmud Torah? And once I know that women are exempt from Talmud Torah, that's established, meaning that already is an assumption going into this discussion. We already went over the psukim earlier in this parak. So once we know that women are exempt from Talmud Torah, so let's make the argument that women are also going to be exempt from mezuzah. To which the Gemara says, no, we're not going to say that. Why not? Lo sakadacha. Dichsiv l'man yibu yimechem v'yimei v'nechem. Gavri ba'ichaye, nashi lo ba'ichaye. If you look at the second paragraph of Shema, what's the transition in the second paragraph of Shema? First tefillin, then limud haTorah, then mezuzah, and then laman yibu yimechem v'yimei v'nechem al adama. And if you do this, you're going to have long days. Now that this is going on, now you and I could have argued it's going on all three mitzvahs that are just mentioned. But the Gemara's assumption is it's going on the last mitzvah that was referenced right before the pasuk of Laman Yirbu, which is the mitzvah of mezuzah. So if you have a mitzvah where the Torah then promises ribu yamim, so you don't think women want ribu yamim? They like it just as much as men do. So the Gemara says that is why, with no consideration to the idea that women are going to be exempt from the mitzvah of mezuzah. V'hare sukkah demitzvah sesei shazman grama. So the Gemara says, okay, now let's consider the mitzvah of sukkah. The mitzvah of sukkah is a time-bound mitzvah, connected to the calendar. And now, now here's the problem regarding sukkah. We have now governing rules in terms of what mitzvahs women are going to be exempt from and what they're going to be obligated from. So when it comes to a time-bound mitzvah, the default governing rule is they're going to be exempt. And meanwhile, the Gemara in Sukkah, and the Gemara here is quoting it, the Gemara in Sukkah brings down a drasha specifically excluding women from the mitzvah of Sukkah. Well, why would I need a drasha? I have the governing rules of time-bound mitzvahs, women are exempt. So the Gemara says, "Halav hachin Hashem chayavos." So why do I need a special drasha to exclude women from sukkah? So the Gemara is going to give two answers to this question. Am Rabbi Yitzchak Sakadat Chamina ho dechsi pesukas teshu kein tadura. So the Gemara says, here's number one. Reason number one, why I would have seriously entertained the idea that women should be obligated, and I need a special exclusion. Number one, says the Gemara, we know that when it comes to the mitzvah of sukkah, the Torah tells us that we have to sit in the sukkah. The Gemara in Sukkah darshins that you have to sit as if you're living in the sukkah. The sukkah becomes your de facto home for the 7 days of sukkahs. Now, teshvu kein taduru. Now, how do you live in your home? So when you're married, you live in your home, husband and wife together. So if you're leaving your home and you're moving out to the sukkah, don't you think it should be husband and wife out in the sukkah as well? So, that's why I would have thought, and therefore that's what I seriously would have entertained the idea that women should be obligated in the mitzvah of sukkah because of this idea of teshvu kein taduru. And that's why the Gemara needs a special limud in terms of excluding women from the mitzvah of sukkah. That's answer number one. Answer number two, Rav Amar Itzrich, on the top of Lamed Almed Beis, Sak Dachamal Nel Chamishasar Mechagamatzos. There is a Gzera Shava, not only do Sukkot and Pesach fall out on the 15th of the month, right? Nisan, let me go in the right order. Tishrei and Nisan. So I know Nisan's the first month, but I mentioned Sukkot first. So they both fall on the 15th day of the month, but the Torah uses the number Chamisha Asar, and the Gemara's understanding is that there's a Gzera Shava linking the two. Now that there's a Gzera Shava linking the two, so now I would have thought, wait one second, on the first night of Pesach, so there's a time-bound mitzvah, it's called matzah. And we know that that's an exception to the rule. Even though it's a time-bound mitzvah, women are obligated in the mitzvah of matzah. But I don't think I explained why. Okay, I didn't. And I'm reviewing what I said earlier. I'll explain that momentarily. In the meantime, let's just stay on point on the Gemara. Women are exempt from the mitzvah of, I'm sorry, women are obligated in the mitzvah of matzah, even though it's a time-bound mitzvah. So now that I have Gzera Shava creating a link between the first night of Pesach and the first night of Sukkah, so I would have thought that that link should obligate women in the mitzvah of Sukkah as well. That's why I need a special lima to tell me that women are exempt from the mitzvah of sukkah. So, malahala nashim chayavas, avkan nashim chayavas tzricha. Okay, and that's why I need a special lima. Women are obligated in the mitzvah of achilas matzah, even though it's a time-bound mitzvah. Why should that be? Rashi, I know. I just wanted to say the Rashi inside. Yeah, Rashi's on the Amud Aleph. I didn't say over the Rashi. I should have done it earlier this morning. Rashi says on the Lamed Amud Aleph, Lel Rishon Shulchava Kedichsev Erev Toch Lamatzos Vizman Garola B'Tesva V'Nisam V'Nashim Chayavos. Rashi writes, I'm all the way back on the Amud Aleph. It's the third narrow line of Rashi. V'Nashim Chayavos Kedam Rabbi Psachim. Rashi quotes the Gemara in Psachim, Nashim Chayavos Be'Achilas Matzah Dvar Torah. It is a mitzvah min Torah for women to eat matzah on the night of Pesach. Shenemar Lo So alav chametz shivas yamim tocha alav matzos kol sheyeshna beval teachel chametz yeshna bekom echol matzah. The inverse relationship between chametz and matzah, right? When the Rambam describes the laws of Pesach, he calls them hilchos chametz umatzah. There's an inverse relationship between the two. And that means now that whoever is bound and subscribes to the Isser of Chametz is going to be bound and subscribed to the positive commandment of Matzah. They're both mentioned in the same Pasuk. And therefore, V'nashim isner b'val te'achal Chametz. Women are certainly bound by the Isser of not eating Chametz. It's a lav in the Torah. They're bound by almost all lavim in the Torah, this being one of them. So the mitzvah lo sasehi, it's a negative prohibition. Therefore, women are also going to be obligated in achilas matzah, the eating of matzah. That is how we know that women are obligated in the eating of matzah. Okay, we are on Lamed Aleph Beis. Where do we stand right now? We are in a series of limudim, but essentially the point of the Gemara is very simple. Women are exempt from time by mitzvahs. How do we know that? from tefillin. Since women are going to be exempt from tefillin, that sets the stage of a binyanav to tell us that women are going to be exempt from all-time bal mitzvahs. And basically, since the Gemara has made that point, first we've established, how do we know that women are exempt from tefillin? It's based on the Hekesh and the Pesukim in Parsha Rishona and Parsha Shni of Shema, and notable exceptions. Okay, the Gemara is going through notable exceptions. Avehare Re'iya, the mitzvah of Re'iya. There's a mitzvah in the Torah that when we have a Beis HaMikdash, we have to be present and seen, right? The Kadosh Baruch Hu takes attendance, and we have to be present in the Beis HaMikdash, and there's also a carbon that goes with that as well. It's called a carbon Re'iya. It's an Ola. Ola's Re'iya that we have to bring when we come to the Beis HaMikdash during the Gimel Regalim. Okay. The mitzvah says Shazman Gramma. Now certainly the mitzvah of Re'iyah is a time by mitzvah. The time of the Kasa Rachman is Zechorcha. And the Torah says that the males are responsible for this mitzvah of Olas Re'iyah. Lahotzi Anashim, women are exempt from this mitzvah. Alav Hachi Nashim Chayavas. Now once again, we have governing rules that time by mitzvahs women are exempt from. So I know that women are exempt from the mitzvah of Re'iyah based on the fact that it's a time by mitzvah. And why is there a special drasha in the Torah? It's not even a drasha, it's a pasuk. Zechorcha. Why does the Torah have to tell us that only this mitzvah only applies to males, not to females? Once again, the Gemara responds to this as well. It's the Rech. Sakadach Hamina, Nail of Re'iyah, Re'iyah Mehakel. I might have thought that we should learn from Hakel. Hakel's a time bound mitzvah, and women are obligated. Same thing with which is Re'iyah. And in basic theme, they're very similar mitzvahs to one another. The mitzvah of Hakel, let's all descend on Yerushalayim, or ascend, I should say. Let's all ascend to Yerushalayim. Let's all hear the Torah from the read by the Melech on Sukkos. Okay, the mitzvah of Re'iyah, very similar. Let's all ascend to Yerushalayim on Regal. So the Gemara says, Ve'adiyaf in a mitzvah and leptura, nail of mitzvah lechiyuva. So the Gemara says, now wait one second. Once we know that women are obligated in the mitzvah of Simcha, so before turning to the mitzvah of tefillin, to saying that that's going to create the binyan av, to tell us that women are exempt from time bound mitzvahs, why not turn to the mitzvah of Simcha and say, hey, it's a time bound mitzvah, and women are obligated, that should create the binyan av. Amar Abaye, Isha Bala Mesamcha. So Abaye's answer is, well, women aren't fundamentally obligated in the mitzvah of Simcha, the fundamental obligation is on the husband to be misameach his wife on Yantav. So Amana Michael Amamoth, the Gemara says, okay, but what about a widow? A widow doesn't have a husband, and yet she's still obligated in the mitzvah of Simcha. That kind of debunks Abaye's theory. So the Gemara says, Bishruya eats low. So the Gemara says, no, even by the Amana, yes, it's true, the Torah also identifies the Amana of being included in the mitzvah of Simcha, but the Torah is assuming, this is the Gemara's response, the Gemara is assuming that this Amana is connected to a family. Meaning, basically, there is a sponsor family to the Amana. This Amana is now with this particular family, and this family is going to take care of this Amana. Menel of Mehakel. So the Gemara says, well, why not learn it from Hakel? Meaning that women should be obligated in time bound mitzvahs. I mean, they're obligated in Hakel. So the Gemara says, Mishum Dahave Matzvah Hakel, Shnei Ksuvim Babayim Ke'echad, V'cho Shnei Ksuvim Babayim Ke'echad, Ein Malamdin. So we'll end today on this point, although we're not in the end of this thread. The Gemara says, well, the mitzvah of Hakel and the mitzvah of Matzah stands as two mitzvahs that stand out as time-bound mitzvahs that women are obligated. And if the Torah is giving us two examples, you know the rule. Once there's two examples in the Torah, it no longer sets a precedent. A binyanav is only when there's one example, not two examples. And since there are two examples in the Torah, these no longer serve as the rule, but they serve rather as the exception. Let's wrap it up. Today we finished up the discussion of standing for the elderly. The Gemara's conclusion is Rachov Kemahalech Dami, that being driven, being carried, is as if you are walking, and therefore you have to stand for Talmud Chacham, even if he himself is not walking on his own, but someone's transporting him, you still have to stand for him. The Gemara ended off with Agadata Halacha regarding how long you should stand for the Nasi, learned from Moshe, and then the Gemara launched into a very long, it's a run-on sentence, in terms of how do we know, what's the source in the Torah that we know, that women are in fact exempt from time-bound mitzvahs. The simplest way to answer it is, it's a binyanav from tefillin. Okay, that's an easy summary statement for today. Obviously there are more details in that, but that's the easiest way to summarize today's daf.